this lecture class, I want to talk about a group of people, the Venetians, and your textbook only talks about them very, very briefly. Like, I think they give the Venetians like 2 sentences. So I'm going to expand on what your textbook says about the ancient Venetians, because I really think they offer a good example of a people who were able to do a lot, but really don't appear in all the historical records all that much. As far as can be learned, it was about 5,000 to 4,000 BCE, before the Common Era, that one group of people began to trickle into what is now present-day Lebanon and Israel, along nearly 300 miles of seacoast along the eastern edge of the Mediterranean, with upland mountains, with mountains and upland valleys. This area is particularly known to readers of the Bible as the land of Cana. Along the shore, there are excellent harbors, and there's also good coastal farmland, but not much of it because of a range of mountains which march parallel to the sea, only a few miles inland. These original Canaanite invaders got as far as the seacoast, settled down there, either displacing or mingling with some of the aboriginal inhabitants who lived by a combination of farming and fishing. The Canaanites established towns, they learned to build boats and go to sea, and they began trading up and down the coast with their neighbors. And as you can see in this map that I've uploaded for you, they really settled on that eastern shore of the Mediterranean. The opportunities open to the early Canaanite trader, and I will also use the word Phoenician interchangeably. So the opportunities open to the early Phoenician trader were entirely different from those open to him prior to 1200 BCE, before the Common Era. So 1200 BCE is a demarcation point for the Phoenician. So an early merchant from one of the 5 principal Phoenician cities prior to 1200 BC would have gazed out into the Mediterranean and really scratched his head thinking about how could I develop a profitable trade route, because he had very limited options. Basically, if he looked south, Egypt controlled the southern part of the Mediterranean. And if he wanted to do trading in the southern part of the Mediterranean, he would have had to deal on Egyptian terms. If he looked to the west, he saw another rich market, the island world of the Aegean Sea. They had really amazing trade goods in that area, notably pottery and inlaid metalwork. These types of articles were being made and distributed by the Minoans and the Mycenaean Greeks. However, for the Phoenician trader, the world to the west, the Aegean Sea area, was basically closed to him. Crete was an island that was nearly 200 miles long, and it lay like kind of like a bar across the foot of the Aegean Sea, and it basically cut off a lot of options, because Crete was the central home base of the first true maritime power. Basically, the Minoans controlled that whole area, and basically the Aegean became their private lake. The Minoans controlled commerce with the Black Sea, and they controlled the whole Mediterranean. So basically, an early Phoenician trader before 1200 BCE, living in one of the 5 principal Phoenician cities known as Aretas, Byblos, Berytus, which became later Beirut, Tyre, and Sidon, they basically would have had limited options. The Minoans were a really mighty people, and if a Phoenician trader so much as put his nose into the Minoan ports of control, he would have really suffered greatly. So, but basically, an early Phoenician trader had to accept the Minoan trading concessions in his own home port. This would have really discouraged him from anything more ambitious than trading with coastal trading, or basically transferring goods between Egypt or something like that, or over the Lebanon Mountains. So they wouldn't really have tried to do too much. This basically became the early pattern of trade for places like Byblos for a good couple hundred of years. They basically just did a little bit with the Egyptians and a little bit into the Lebanese Mountains. Then beginning right around 1400 BCE, there occurred a series of political upheavals that basically shook this relative stable trading world to its roots. Somehow, and it's unknown to historians and archaeologists at this point, but somehow the Mycenaean Greeks got control of the island of Crete and the Minoan Sea Empire vanished, leaving only scorched palaces and a glow of past glories behind it. The Mycenaean occupation lasted 200 years, and it then collapsed. So basically, the Greek cities on the mainland were sacked one by one. How the Mycenaean civilization self-destructed around 1200 BCE is not really known definitively either. Some people, some scholars, believe that it became the victim of waves of invasion by another Greek-related people called the Dorians, pouring in from the north. Some people think it might have been environmentally related. Some people think it could have been internally. It could have caused from internal disruptions. In either case, the Bronze Age was ending, and it went out in a series of convulsions whose shockwaves were felt with the entire Mediterranean world. And that is why I say that by 1200 BCE, the options open to an early Phoenician / Canaanite trader really changed drastically. All right. My husband is lucky enough to be sitting in the same room as I'm taping this lecture, and he just told me on the last slide I said the word basically 9 times. I apologize for the redundancies. Talking into a computer screen actually isn't as easy as it looks. I know last semester the voice tick I had when I was talking into my computer screen was okay. I think I probably said okay about 30,000 times. It looks like this semester I'm liking the word basically. I'll try not to use it anymore with the rest of this lecture. All right, let's keep moving ahead. So in all the confusion during the years around 1200 BCE, piracy became a way of life for many people. Once the Minoan control was broken, groups of warring people multiplied like cockroaches in every coastal cranny. They took to looting coastal towns, and as their successes grew, so did their ambitions. They joined forces. Their sinister fleets grew bigger, and they went after bigger game. In 1200 BCE, when the island of Crete basically was falling apart, it was ravaged a second time and never rebuilt. In this world of chaotic change, the Canaanite trader really began to emerge as a Phoenician. These ports quite suddenly showed a marked increase in vigor and enterprise, and two of them, the Port of Sidon, S-I-D-O-N, and Tyre, T-Y-R-E, would have long and bright histories. This coastal blooming became at a moment of when there was like a power vacuum everywhere else. And a power vacuum is not your Hoover or your any other kind of vacuum cleaner you use in your house, but rather a power vacuum means there was no control. Nobody basically exercised any power. I just was going to use the word basically again. What you have is you have the complex institution of government broken down when you have a power vacuum. So these pirate fleets became real big nuisances. The Mycenaean and Minoan sea power was completely unraveled. Egypt, at this point in time, 1200 BC, has slid into a long decline and lost its power over the Canaanites forever. So instead of exacting large annual tribute in the form of timber from Byblos, as it had in the old days, Egypt was reduced to buying timber at increasingly stiff prices. So the difference to Byblos, and again the spelling for Byblos would be B-Y-B-L-O-S, and by extension all the other Phoenician ports and their rulers, was remarkable. So we really start to see the Phoenicians emerge at this time. Their influence, the Phoenicians' influence, will span about 1,000 years. But what you want to remember is there's never a country or an empire called Phoenicia. They are just a collection of city-states. So although the Phoenicians extended their influence throughout the whole Mediterranean, you'll never on a map find an empire labeled Phoenicia. Instead, you're going to see their port cities named. They were really more interested in the development of trade rather than of creating a cohesive empire. And they went everywhere. They swapped goods with the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Africans, and Spanish tribesmen. The entire Mediterranean world basically became their bazaar. They even went beyond it. Sources, remains that we have found lead us to believe that they went into the Atlantic, far down the African coast, and possibly north to the British Isles. Although Tyre, again that would be T-Y-R-E, and Sidon, S-I-D-O-N, were the richest cities, other communities seem to have maintained a relative degree of independence. The Phoenicians apparently lacked the sense of national identity and taste for empire that, like the Hittites or the Romans, did employ. Their various foreign settlements, with the notable exception of Carthage, were commercial bases rather than real towns. As traders, they were their own worst competitors and were extremely jealous of one another, with the result that though they spoke a common language and worshipped the same gods, they never did coalesce into a country. They would refer to themselves as Carthaginians, Sidonians, Tyrrhenians, but never as Phoenicians. The very name Phoenicia was actually unknown to them. The label probably was pasted onto them by Greeks and preserved by the accident that the Greek language and its literature, and not the Phoenicians, have been passed down to us. The Phoenicians earned the name the carriers of civilization because of their role in spreading the culture of the ancient world. Through trade and colonization, they introduced the achievements of Mesopotamia and Egypt to the less advanced people of the Western Mediterranean. From the Hittites, and the Hittites were Indo-European people who settled in Anatolia, also called Asia Minor, and it's now modern-day Turkey. So it's from the Hittites that the Phoenicians learned how to smelt iron, a technology they later introduced to the Greeks and the North Africans. This should remind you of the term that I brought up the first week of school called cultural diffusion. The passing on of this technique of how to smelt iron from the Hittites to the Phoenicians to the Greeks and then the North Africans, that's cultural diffusion. And for every new group who picks up that particular skill, they will change it just slightly to adjust to their ways of life. These Phoenician merchants and colonists also spread their use of the alphabet. While the Phoenicians did not develop the alphabet, they made their own contributions to improving it. Again, this is an example of cultural diffusion. Containing only 22 symbols, each representing a single consonant, the Greeks adopted the alphabet about 800 BCE, and they added symbols for vowel sounds. Later, the Romans adapted the Greek alphabet, and they passed the resulting written language on to the Western world. In fact, the very word alphabet comes from two words from the Phoenician alphabet, two symbols of the Phoenician alphabet. In addition to spreading the alphabet, the Phoenicians, as they moved westward throughout the Mediterranean world, swapped goods found or made at home. This is really important. The heart of their export trade consisted of magnificent cedar and textiles dyed with a rich purple derived from a shellfish found along their coast. They were very well known for their cedar and that purple dye that they created from the shellfish. They also traded wine and glass. The trading vessels also served as international carriers, shipping products between the eastern and western Mediterranean. To facilitate their trading, the Phoenicians established a series of bases throughout the Mediterranean. Moving westward, they founded colonies on the island of Cyprus, Malta, Sicily, and Sardinia, and on the mainland of Spain. The traditional date of the foundation of their first North African settlement called Utica was as early as 1100 BCE. But by far the most important Phoenician colony in North Africa was Carthage, and that was founded in 725 BCE. When the Phoenician cities fell under Assyrian domination and eventually under Persian rule, Carthage remained the center of Phoenician power and commerce in the West. The bases served as not only trading posts, but also as posts for exploration. One Phoenician sailor named Himilico sailed north by the Atlantic coast of Spain and France to Britain. Overland, the Phoenician trade routes established trade relations with the interior of the Sahara and perhaps even with Nigeria. These Phoenician caravan routes remained in use throughout Roman times, providing gold, ivory, wild beasts, and above all else, slaves. You might ask yourself, with such a rich history, what then happened to the Phoenicians? They basically faded because of special circumstances they found themselves in, both geographically and historically. The geographical position of the Phoenician coastal towns, they were not only strategically located with respect to trade, but also with respect to invasion. The most powerful forces of the day were the Assyrians and the Babylonian empires to the east of Lebanon, the Egyptian Empire to the south, and the Hittite Empire on the Turkish plateau to the north. All of these were land powers with large armies, but very little in terms of fleets, water fleets. They were separated from one another by rugged, dry terrain, much of it true desert. The only way they could get at one another was by established caravan routes through a few mountain passes, or by moving along the Phoenician coast. Thus, control of these Phoenician port cities became of enormous strategic importance to the imperial dreams of the Babylonians or the Egyptian conquerors. So as a result, these ports, each a separate little trading kingdom unto itself, really couldn't make it. They were constantly being fought, attacked and fought over constantly. They were being sacked and knocked down and built up again. And their contents were trampled, crunched, burned, carted away, and destroyed. And because they had never coalesced into a country in and of itself, they weren't able to join forces enough. So unfortunately, with all of this upheaval, a lot of the records from the Phoenician society have been lost. And instead, much of our knowledge about the Phoenicians has come from others, from people who, in talking about themselves, talked about the Phoenicians. Wall carvings from Egypt and Mesopotamia give us a better picture of the Phoenician sailing ships and cities than any other Phoenician source can do. Only two significant collections of clay tablets that scholars are willing to ascribe to Phoenicians or their immediate ancestors have ever been discovered. One devotes itself to politics, the other to religion. Neither says anything about Phoenician daily life. No Phoenician tale has ever been found, nor has any song. In terms of the historical record, Lebanon's climate has also had a really bad effect. Coastal Lebanon, again, which present-day Lebanon is the home of where Phoenicia once was, so coastal Lebanon is fairly damp, so anything written on papyrus would quickly disappear. Wood would have rotted, and clay tablets, unless safely buried in the ground, would have crumbled. Even stone monuments or inscriptions, if exposed long enough to the weathering of wind, rain, and frost, would become blurred and eventually indecipherable. Therefore, while the Phoenicians over a period of about 1,000 years undoubtedly were very busy making things, saving things, and writing things down, the elements were equally busy destroying the historical record. And those would have all been primary documents and artifacts that scholars would have wanted to look at. Thus, it's been very difficult to find out much about these Phoenicians. So by the beginning of the 19th century, when archaeologists first began to concern themselves with these elusive people, there seemed to be almost nothing lying about for anyone to study. But slowly, there's been a growing collection of trade objects that the Phoenicians carried about, and we have started to reconstruct their past from these assembled items that archaeologists have been finding throughout the Mediterranean. Some of these artifacts were of Phoenician manufacture, some the goods of others for whom they were acting as middlemen. All of them are widely scattered throughout the ancient world, thus proving the assumption correct that the Phoenicians were extremely busy traders and travelers. One thing that has aided the quest for information about the Phoenicians has been a shipwreck discovered in 1960 by two Americans off the coast of Caledonia, Cape Caledonia in the Mediterranean. This wreck had been reported to them by local sponge fishermen. They found that it landed on a, that the boat had landed on a hard rocky bottom where there had been little or no sand or mud to cover and preserve it. Therefore, nearly all of the hull of the little ship had been eaten away by marine worms. All that was left of it was the cargo and underneath that bits of its bottom planking, along with a layer of twigs and branches. This stuff is known as dunnage and has been widely used throughout marine history. And that's how we're beginning to piece together the record of who the Phoenicians were. And they do have a real interesting past.